I will try to jam a lot of content into this, into the program. For those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Karen Curry, and I am the author of Understanding Human Design. And hopefully you're on this call because you bought the book and you started going through it. And now you're curious and intrigued and decidedly excited about learning more about yourself and about human design. So we are going to spend the next 3 weeks together at the same time in the evenings. On Tuesday evenings, we'll be meeting at 7 p.m. Central Time. Now, I'm going to do my best to jam as much content as I can into every hour that we meet. Some of the material tonight, here's what I want to do with you guys. What I want to do tonight is give you a ton of introductory information. So some of the stuff that we covered tonight is kind of the basic stuff, but it's really important to go over the basic stuff because, first of all, I want you to get very, very clear about your human design type and your human design strategy. If you don't walk away with anything else from human design, and trust me, there's a whole lot more you could walk away with, but if you don't walk away with anything else, please just walk away with an awareness of your energy type and what you need to do, how you need to show up in life according to your energy type. That's what we call your strategy. I want you, if you just follow your type and strategy, everything else is going to click into place. Now, I am asking you to a certain degree to take a little bit of a leap of faith with this information. And by the way, if you hear wild, crazy noises in the background, for those of you who haven't been on calls with me before, when you're on a call with me, it's sort of like stepping into my living room. And what you may or may not be able to hear right now is that my 4-year-old is running crazy upstairs because it's Halloween tomorrow, and that makes all 4-year-olds crazy. And periodically, you will hear my very neurotic dog who has separation anxiety. If I move 2 feet away from him, he starts to think he's been abandoned, so he will start to whine until I tell him to come back and put his head on my lap. So periodically, as we spend time together, you will be introduced to all the crazy members of my family. So just be comfortable with the insanity of it is us here. So over the course of the next couple of weeks, I'm going to give you the basic information. Tonight we're going to cover in great depth the parts of the chart and type and strategy. The reason why I'm jamming all of this into one night is dualfold. Number one, there, of course, this information is in the book. Number two, there are extensive audios on the understandinghumandesign.com site in the reader resource section that go even more deeply into type and strategy. So there are places for you to get access to this information and this depth of information that are out there. What I really want to get to next week and the following week is the 9 centers and how those energy centers are influencing your life, how sometimes not understanding how your energy works might be keeping you blocked or stuck, how you can shift your awareness so that you can get yourself unstuck, and how you can really start living out the wisdom and the beauty of who you are by understanding the nature of your 9 centers. So tonight will be jam-packed. Of course, the next 2 classes will also be jam-packed, but we will slow it down just a little bit more because I would like to, over the course of the next 2 classes especially, really make sure we're engaging in what I call catalytic conversations, where we're really looking at and bringing to your awareness aspects of your unique energy. So I am muting the call just because we have a lot of people on the call, and sometimes, especially with Skype and stuff, we get background noises. That does not mean that you cannot ask a question, okay? So if you ask a question on the call, if you would press *2, that actually raises your hand on my dashboard. So I'll know you have a question, and I will do my best to get to your question as quickly as possible. If you are listening on the webcast, just shoot me a question on the webcast little conversation box. I can't type an answer back, but I will do my best to answer your question while I'm talking. So, all right, so let's get started. But before we get started, I'm going to unmute you guys for just a second and make sure. Are there any questions, you guys? You're all unmuted for just a minute. Everybody good?
Yes.
All right, awesome. Okay, let's get rolling. All right, so we're going to start first by talking of some of these slides I will be slipping through because there are like a billion slides and we're not going to get them all in, but we're going to talk a little bit about what exactly is human design. And the way we talk about human design in the less than woo-woo world is we say it's a cutting-edge personality assessment tool that's practical, simple, reliable, and life-changing. Of course, in the more woo-woo world, when we're looking at the lightworker realm or the esoteric realm, what we know about human design is that it is a synthesis of Eastern and Western astrology, the Hindu chakra system, the Judaic Kabbalah, the Chinese I Ching and quantum physics. Now, people always say, well, how does that work and where are all the parts in the chart? How do those correlate? So I'm going to give you that information. And follow along with me. I will try to keep it as simple as possible because it's not the simplest aspect about design. The Eastern and Western astrology part comes from the way in which we calculate the positions of the gates and the planets on the chart. So I'm not going to get too much into the Eastern and Western or Eastern and Vedic astrology aspect of it, but just know that in the way that we calculate the planetary positions, we include both Eastern and Western movement patterns of the planets. The Hindu chakra system, as you probably can guess, correlates pretty nicely to the nine centers in the chart. So when you look at the chart, there are nine geometric shapes. Those nine geometric shapes kind of correlate to the seven chakras. And I'll tell you a little bit about how this works, because people always want to know this, and I think it's kind of cool. In 1787, we actually evolved energetically from being a seven-centered being to becoming nine-centered beings. And what happened for us was that the heart chakra actually split into two different energy centers. The heart chakra split into the G center, which is the diamond in the middle of the chart, and the will center, which is the tiny little triangle to the right of the G center. The power center, the third chakra, split into the spleen, which is the triangle, the big triangle on the left-hand side of the chart, and the emotional solar plexus, which is on the right-hand side of the chart. All of these shifts and change marked an increase in our consciousness and our awareness on a species level. So what that basically means is that we heralded in the Age of Enlightenment, and as part of that, that was really a symptom of our evolved energy field and our expansion in consciousness. We are actually slated for a new upgrade, another expansion in our consciousness in the year 2027, according to Human Design, which is really also very exciting stuff. We're not going to talk about that tonight, but I will allude to that a little bit. And later on, I'll tell you where, if you really want to learn more about that, if you think that's really cool for you, I'll show you where you can get some more information about that too. The Judaic Kabbalah system, even though it looks like it's very similar to the nine centers, if you see right here, you'll see this is called the Tree of Life, which is from the Judaic Kabbalah system. All the little dots don't have anything to do with the chart, but the lines in between the dots on the Tree of Life correlate to the channels in the Human Design chart. Okay, so all the little channels and lines that run in between the centers, those are correlated to the energy flows from the Kabbalah. The Chinese I Ching, of course, if you look at the 64 gates in Human Design, there's a direct correlation between the I Ching and the 64 gates in Human Design. The quantum physics part is kind of cool. Here's how it comes in. We are all activated when we stand up. The top of our chart is activated by the neutrino stream. So everything in your chart gets activated and brought to life by stardust, and stardust actually flows through our crown chakra and activates our energy. In Human Design, when you lie down, your design actually changes. Everybody's design changes when they lie down. And part of the reason why it changes when we lie down is because the nature of how the energy field of the neutrino stream hits us shifts. So it changes. So let's get a little bit more practical here. What can Human Design do for you? Unfortunately, you can't see. This is a slide that actually moves, but it doesn't do that on this webcast. It helps you understand your behavioral patterns and habits. It helps you see where you grow. It shows you your potential weaknesses and how you can turn those weaknesses into strengths. And most importantly, it's one of the most powerful, effective, reliable decision-making tools that I know of on the planet. And the reason why I love it so much as a decision-making tool is that it really is a very powerful and practical way to help you get out of your head. And we're going to talk a lot about that tonight. We're going to talk about how to get yourself out of the head and into the more primal and yet beautiful high consciousness place that you can be in when you understand your design, that allows you to make decisions that are much more effective, much more empowered, much more clear, and much more in alignment with the truth of who you are. Okay, so just for a quick second, my webcast peeps, send me just a quick note and let me know that, hey, you still see the slides and you hear me. That would be awesome if somebody could just send me a quick note. all right, now I'll be watching carefully. Okay, so this little chart, this is called the Human Design Mandala. When you get your free chart from us, when you send away your information, get your chart, you're not going to get the whole mandala. You're just going to get this little triangular part. We call this the human design body graph. So you'll hear me refer to the body graph throughout the course of the evening. When I talk about the body graph, I am talking about this triangle. Sometimes we lovingly refer to it as the mighty triangle. So, sorry, this highlight tool is not very it's not very good. All right, cool. All right. In the human design chart, there are 9 energy centers, okay? Each energy center is responsible for processing a different kind of energy. So we see the top center is called the head center. The next one is the ajna. Then we have the throat center. This is the throat here at the throat. This yellow diamond is the G center. The heart center is the little tiny triangle here. Then we have the sacral, which is the square right here. Then we have the emotional solar plexus, which is the triangle on the right side. And we have the spleen on the left. And then the root center. Now, sometimes, and I know this bothers me too because I'm a nurse by training, you know, people say, well, how come the spleen is on the wrong side? And the only thing I can say to you is, I don't know. All right, so we are very briefly just going to run through the centers, but as I said, over the course of the next 2 classes, we're going to go deep into the energy centers. So the head center is the center for inspiration, ideas, and mental pressure. This is where the spark from the neutrino stream or stardust comes in and starts to activate our energy field. The ajna center is your center for concrete thinking, analysis, data processing, and storage. Okay, notice that when we talked about the head center, we said inspiration, ideas, and mental pressure, and then ajna was concrete thinking, analysis, data processing, and storage. Nowhere in those 2 centers does it say place for you to make good decisions. In fact, if we're really honest with ourselves, when we try to make decisions in our head, I should ask you guys, how many of you do pro and con lists? I'm unmuting you guys for a second. How many of you have done pro and con lists, my phone people?
Yes.
And how does that work for you?
Sometimes very helpful.
Uh-huh. And do you find sometimes you just sit there going, pro, con, eeny, meeny. Okay, this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's nothing wrong with a pro-con list. I mean, the thing is, it's a great way to analyze data. It's a great way to look at options. But ultimately, what we see with design is that for most of us, there's more that works than just figuring things out with our head. And what's kind of interesting is what we see is that actually 7/8 of us don't have a lot of definition up in our heads, which means 7/8 of us are not designed to hold on to things too long in our heads. And if you're trying to make a decision up there, things are always changing. It's sort of a hard place to make a decision. The next center that we want to look at is called the throat center. The throat center is the center for communication and manifestation into action. And we will spend a lot of time talking about the throat center next week. The next center is called the G center. The G center is the center for self-identity, love, and direction. So this is a very, very important part. What we see in the G center is what I call the potential for mankind in action. What we see in this G center, if you look at the chart, and I like to look at the chart as being kind of like the genetic code. You know, if you look at our genetic code, we don't express everything in our genetic code. You know, some of us have blue eyes, some of us have green eyes, some of us have curly hair, some of us have straight hair. We don't all express all of the potential of what we could be genetically in human form. The human design chart is very much like that genetic code. It contains within it the potential of the expression energetically of every aspect of what it means to be human, but we don't all express all of it all at the same time. But what we do see, particularly in this G center, and this to me is the most profound piece, next to the fact that there is no energy for suffering anywhere in the chart. We're not actually designed to suffer or to be in pain. But what we see from this G center, which is the center for direction for humanity, is that when we are fulfilling the highest expression of ourselves as humans, we are designed to be empowered, to love ourselves, to be in government, but in governmental structures where we all have equal voice and equal power. We are designed to make creative contributions to make a difference in the world. We are designed to take the lessons from the past and turn them into blessings. We are designed to live a life that is driven or given direction to by the love of spirit. We are designed to be physically healthy and well. We are designed to have all of the resources that we need to fulfill our each unique each individual and unique life purposes and life directions, and we are designed to all come from a place of deep love for humanity. That's the highest expression of what's possible for all of us, and it's all contained within this G-Center. Now, obviously, when we talk about human design and we talk about energies, everything in the chart, in your chart, in your buddy's chart, in any chart that I show you over the next few weeks, anything in the chart is thematic. There's a theme in the chart. And when I put the book together, I specifically wanted to address that theme issue. We have the power and the potential with awareness. So when you understand yourself and you know your gates and you know your channels and you know your openness, when you have that level of awareness about who you are and how you operate, you can start to deliberately make conscious choices about bringing out the highest expression of whatever theme is in your chart. Everything in the chart has, my teacher used to teach that everything in the chart has duality. I don't like to see it so much as a duality because I think that humans are too complicated to be black and white or A or Z. You know, humans are very complex, and I think for a lot of us in our expression of ourselves in life, we're always kind of operating on a continuum, and it's not a limited continuum. It's an expansive continuum that has a capacity to always be evolving. So when we're working with ourselves and our own energies, and we talk about the themes in the chart or the themes in certain energies in the chart, we're oftentimes talking about the low aspect, and I'll call it that, the low aspect, moving ourselves with deliberation to the higher aspect. The highest expression of that G-center is pretty beautiful. I just shared it with you. The lower expression is pretty gnarly, and I'll share some of that with you later too. What's so beautiful, though, is if you've ever lived out the lower aspect of some of those energies, you know, now with awareness, you have the ability to start making different choices and holding on to different energies and different expressions. And ultimately, when you start to shift here, when you start to work from a place of self-love, when you start to work from a place of being empowered, when you start to work from a place of being guided by your love of spirit, when you start to work from a place of awareness of the resources that are available to you, this center for direction starts to take you and your life in different directions. So if any of you have ever had sort of a cosmic awakening or a mystical conversion or just, you know, very deliberately done some work on yourself, you know, it's no mistake that work evidences or manifests in a change in your life circumstances because you start to shift the energies here in this G-center, and that G-center starts taking you in different places. The heart center, which is also sometimes called the ego or the will center, is the center for money, ego, and willpower. One of my favorite things in design is that only 1/8 of us actually have willpower, but we're completely obsessed with it. So we'll talk a little bit more about how to work and through, how to get through life without willpower. The sacral center is one of the most powerful motors in the body. It is the center for workforce and life force energy. We will talk a lot about it today. The solar plexus is the center for emotions and emotional energy. The spleen is your center for intuition, health, survival, and time. And the root center is your center for adrenaline, pressure, and stress. So for the next part of the presentation, I really want you to make sure you have your chart out so we can look at this a little bit more closely. We're going to go through the parts of the chart. So the first thing you're going to notice when you look at your human design chart is that you have colored parts of your chart and white parts of your chart. So when you look at the colored and the white, first of all, people always ask me, well, why is this green or why is this yellow? This system has a very interesting origin. This system, human design, was actually received, or sometimes we say channeled, by a man named Robert Allen Krakauer in 1987. There was a supernova in January of 1987 that scientists refer to as supernova 1987A. And during the supernova, Robert Allen Krakauer was on the island of Ibiza, Spain, and during that time, that event, he was actually taken over by a force or an energy that he later referred to as the voice for 8 days. So he was physically taken over for 8 days. During the course of that transmission from this entity, he was given the entire system, and a good bit of the time that he spent receiving the information for the system, he was instructed over and over and over again to draw this chart exactly the way it is and specifically with the colors that it is. And I don't know, I've never heard of a really good reason why they are the way that they are color-wise, but I have a theory, and my theory is if you become a human design specialist and you study human design, there comes a point in your process of learning to read a chart where the chart reading process becomes quite intuitive. You know, sometimes I find that when you look at a chart, you can almost feel the energy of the person from the chart. It becomes this really interesting visual format of really seeing somebody. So I have a suspicion that when this information was given to Ra, it was created this way because for some reason this chart is a visual archetype or a visual identifier for people, and they can really see each other more better or more clearly when they have access to the chart. One of the other things that Ra used to say, and actually this was on the back of his very first book that he wrote about human design, was that when he received the human design information, he was one of the few people in the world who received the information consciously, but that everyone on the planet received the information from the neutrino stream in their unconscious energy. And what I find oftentimes, I like to do expos, and when I do expos, I'll run free charts and I'll put up an image of the body graph. You know, I'll put a big sign up and people will walk by and they'll be like, oh, what's that? And what I find is that people sometimes have very intense emotional reactions to the chart, or they'll see their chart and they'll be very moved by it, or they'll even cry. And I know for me personally, the first time I saw my chart, I literally just sat down and cried. It took my breath away, and I was so moved by the chart, and I had no idea what it meant. It was just like this strange thing that somebody handed me. But that's not an unusual experience for people. So I do think that, you know, as mundane as we can make it and we can say, oh, it's a personality assessment tool, you know, I do think there's a very mystical and very special component to it. And, you know, people, and you may have had this experience yourself, people can be really moved by the process of discovering it and learning from it. So, and somebody just wrote in, why are the centers colored? And the real answer to your question, Elizabeth, about why the centers are colored is, I don't know. So that was just what Ra was told when he was given the information. He was told they needed to be these particular colors. So they are what they are. So, all right. So when we look at the colored centers and the white centers, we have a vocabulary word that we use. So you're going to be learning some new vocabulary here, which is awesome because what we know in the last 10 years when we've studied brain evolution and development and all the cool things we can do now with the different technological ways that we can peek in the brain and study the brain, what we know is that when you learn new things like new vocabulary words, it makes your brain grow. So, yay, your brain is going to be growing for the next 3 weeks in addition to your expansion in consciousness and your awareness of yourself and hopefully your self-love. So when we look at the colored parts of the chart, we call the colored parts of your chart defined. So colored equals defined. And you'll hear me use these words a lot. So by the end of this hour even, you'll get it. The white parts of your chart, we call them open, or sometimes you'll hear me say undefined. So your colored parts are called defined. The white parts are called open. All right. When the colored parts are defined, these are parts of your energy. These are aspects of your energy that are true and consistent for you. This is the truth of who you are. This is who you really are. These are energies that you have available to you all the time. They're yours. This is what people feel about you. This is what people sense about you. And most importantly, this is the energy that you radiate out into the world. So when somebody stands in your energy field, they feel your defined parts of your chart. They feel the parts of your chart that are consistent and always there and available to you. This is the part of your chart that's locked in at the moment of your birth. So your defined parts are your consistent parts. Your open centers, or your white centers, so everything is in the white. Everything that's white is where you take energy and information in from the world around you. So let's look at this as an example. If you look at this center on this particular chart, the triangle on the right-hand side of the chart, this is the emotional solar plexus. This is the center for emotional energy. Half of us have it open. Half of us have it colored in. When you have the center open, it means you feel all of the emotional energy around you. So if you live with a partner who has a lot of emotional energy defined in their chart and you have open emotional energy in your chart, a lot of times when you're experiencing emotional energy, even though you might think, oh, I'm having all these big feelings, it might not actually be your emotional energy. It might actually be your partner's energy. And what we'll talk about next week and the following week when we start looking at centers is we'll start to see that when centers are open, we tend to evolve certain predictable behavioral patterns in our open centers based on the way in which we experience energy. So, for example, let's go back to the solar plexus piece for a moment. Remember I said that if you have it open, you experience other people's emotional energy. Now, let me just clarify something because this is really, really important. And I said next week this is going to be super important because we're going to delve deep into this. Where you have openness is not only where you just feel other people's stuff, but you actually amplify it. So when you have the center open, you're not just feeling your partner's emotional energy, you're actually amplifying it. And because you're amplifying it, it's very easy to mistake it for your own energy. Now, it also means that you're very sensitive to other people's emotional energy. And what happens a lot of times when people have this center open is that they evolve a life pattern of tiptoeing through emotional minefields. So this is the design of nice people, okay? If you have an open solar plexus, you probably have learned to not make a wave, to not always speak your truth, or if you speak your truth, you couch it in really lovely words so that people don't get mad at you. You might find that you sometimes struggle to set good boundaries because you don't want people to be upset with you. And even if you have really, really good news, you kind of don't want to share it. You just want to kind of keep it to yourself because you don't like to experience the emotional wave or the emotional impact of the people around you who do have a lot of emotional energy. So that's just that one center. This happens to us in all of our centers. Wherever we have whiteness or openness is where we experience energy from other people, and we don't just experience it. We actually experience it amplified. All right. Now I'm going to take a very quick pause here and go back to the webcast and say, please send me a quick note to make sure that you guys see the slides. And if you guys are on the phone, again, star 2, if anybody has any questions up until this point, star 2 shows me that you have a question and I can unmute you. All right, good. I think we're doing okay. Good. All right. Sorry to be ultra paranoid about losing the slides, but I cannot tell you the exciting adventure I had this afternoon with this system. Okay. So the next thing we're going to talk about are the 64 gates. You'll see that there are 64 numbers on the chart. People often say, do the numbers move? No, they're always in the same place. You'll see that some of the numbers, these numbers, by the way, are called gates. So we talk about a lot. We talk about gates. Sometimes people will refer to the gates as hexagrams. You'll hear both words kind of used interchangeably. Technically, in human design, they're gates. They do correlate to the hexagrams from the Chinese I Ching, which is why sometimes people slip and they say hexagrams instead of gates. But technically, they're gates. You will see that a gate is either activated or defined, meaning it's got color around it. So here we have the gate 19 that's at the bottom at the root center on the top right-hand side. It has the gate 19 colored in next to it, and that is an activated or a defined gate. Okay, you'll also see that each one of those gates are part of a channel. So every channel, meaning every one of these lines that connects two centers together, has within it two gates. So every channel has a gate. So hang on just a second. Let me use my marker here. This is a channel. 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 I feel like Borat at the end of the movie. Borat, which has a funny outtake that I like. But you'll see in this channel that there are actually two parts. This channel is comprised of the gate 63 and the gate 4. So this channel has two gates in it. So every channel has two gates in it with one weird exception. There's one little weird spot in the chart, but we won't talk about that. So their channels connect the centers. So there are channels that connect the centers. Every channel is comprised of two gates. So there are two gates per channel. So as we see here, we have the gate 32 and then the gate 54. And by the way, in this particular example, this highlighting thing is not working very well tonight. This, in this particular example, the 54 and the 32 are both open. Okay? In this same example, you'll see here is the gate 50, and it is activated, so it is defined. If you have a gate that's just hanging there, it's called a hanging gate. Now, the cool part about hanging gates, when you get deeper into your human design studies, your hanging gates are what we call electromagnetics, which means you're usually attracted to people who have the other side of the channel, and it creates a theme in your relationship. But that's kind of the juicy stuff. This is a defined channel. So you'll see here we have a defined channel. So the 43 and the 23 here is both colored in, connected, and it defines the whole channel. It is a defined channel. When you have a defined channel, it will color in the center on either side. So this ajna here, the green triangle pointing down, and this brown square here, the throat center, these are both defined by the 43-23. So when you have two gates in a chart that are defined, that make a channel, then the centers at either end of the channel will also be defined. So you can't have, if you have an open center, it means you will not have any gates connected to that center. So a defined channel will have a defined center on either end. Now, let's do a quick review. There are 9 energy centers. A white center is open. An open center receives energy. A colored center is called defined. A defined energy center is a transmitter. It transmits energy, or it puts radiates energy out into the world. There are 64 gates. There are pathways that connect each of the centers called channels. There are 36 channels. There are 2 gates per channel. By the way, when we talk about it being colored in, it can either be, when it comes to channels, the channels can either be red, black, or checkered. It does not matter. It's still called definition. So red, black, or checkered doesn't matter. It's still definition. So, all right, good. Good. And thank you guys for the feedback. Okay, so I have a question that just came in. It's kind of interesting, so we'll roll with this. Somebody wrote in, Karen, when I was being born, I started coming out the birth canal, and the doctor wasn't there yet. So the nurses didn't want me coming out, so they pushed me back in and anesthetized my mother. Wow. Obviously, I would have been born earlier had they let me come out as originally planned. I've always wondered about an astrology reading given the glitch in my birth. Your thoughts? Here's what I would tell you, is that when you decide to incarnate as a soul, for whatever reason, we know ahead of time the time that we're coming out. We consciously, I believe anyway, this is what I call gray matter. So I can't tell you that this is for sure true, but this is what I think. I think that we consciously create or co-create the design that we bring to our earthly life form in this incarnation. So we have consciously chosen whatever chart we have, because this is the chart that's necessary to help us on our soul's evolution in this lifetime. So whether there was a glitch in your birth, whether you were born prematurely, whether you were born by cesarean, whether you were part of twins and one twin was born one day and one twin was born the other, it doesn't really matter. In the end, your soul knew when you were going to be born, and that I would go with the time that your feet left your mother's body, which is when we calculate a human design chart, that's the time we use. And I wouldn't call it so much a glitch as there were just a whole bunch of souls co-creating your exact birth time with you when you were born. So. All right. Okay, now we're done with our review, right? Next slide. Okay, as I said, the channels can be either red, black, or checkered. Anything that's red is an unconscious aspect of your chart. That doesn't mean you're not aware of it. It just means that these particular energies are more innocent in how they express through you, and you don't have as much control over them. Anything that's black is an aspect of your personality that you're consciously aware of. And if you're consciously aware of it, you have a little bit more conscious control over it. Any aspect in your chart that's checkered, so if you have these checkered gates and channels, that just simply means that you have that aspect both in your conscious and unconscious, and it's probably a pretty prevalent theme in your life. So we did that already. Okay, now we get to the meat. Before we get to the meat, though, again, just real quick, anybody have any other questions or comments before we start talking about type? All right. So Mariana just asked, what's the significance of a gait that's red? Is it a trait that I'm unconscious of? And I would say, yes, it's not so much that you're, as I said, it's not so much that you're unconscious of it, but it's going to be very natural and innocent in how it expresses. So let's say, let's go back to this chart. Let's go back to this slide for just a minute. Let's look at this. Let's look at the 58. So if you see here, I'll use my little highlighter here if I can do this. It takes so much coordination to do this. I have to do this with like two fingers on my little mouse pad, and it's not. I mean, this is the gate 58. So the gate 58 is called the gate of the joy of life, and people who have this energy are usually quite joyful. I have my oldest son has this gate, and he was just one of those kids that always has a smile on his face, and he's just always really happy and pretty joyful. So when you have this energy unconscious in your chart, it means that the joy comes out of you pretty much without limitation. And it's not like you're consciously going, okay, I'm going to choose joy. And some of us have to more consciously choose joy. But for you, when you have this unconscious, it's just a natural part of your personality. And it's not like you can turn your joy on or off so easily. It's just part of who you are. Now, that being, yeah, well, we'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to make it too complicated. That's how I would explain that. So if it's red, it's not that it's unconscious as much as it's innocent. That's how I would put it. All right. My phone people, you guys got any questions for me? Okay, cool. All right. Okay, so Kimmy says, oh, I knew this was coming. She says, does gate 10 only go to 34, or can it also go to 20 and 57? You did find the one weird funky place in the chart. Yes, if you look at a chart, let's see if I can go back and find this on the chart on a better slide here. Let's use this slide. Remember how I said every gate has two channels. I mean, sorry, every channel has two gates, right? Every channel has two gates. So every little line that connects two centers has two gates. And I said, remember, except for one little funky area in the chart. What Kimmy is talking about is the funky area in the chart, and that is this channel here, and this channel here, and you'll see it on the chart. It's the funky little, very crowded part on the left-hand side of the chart. And I will just say that the 57 or any of those gates there can connect to each other. So even though you have, well, let's just do this. There is the 5720, okay? That's one channel. Oops. There is the 5710. That's one channel. There is the 5734, that's another channel. There is the 3410, that's another channel. There is the 3420, that's another channel. And then there is the 1020, and that's the final channel. So in that one little area, it gets a little bit complicated. So we do count those when we talk about the 36 channels. Those are all accounted for. But, yes, absolutely, Kimmy. It gets a little bit wonky in that one little section of the of the chart. So any other questions, you guys, before we go on to type? All right, cool. All right, so now we're going to get to the meat of what I want to talk about tonight. Let's talk about the five energy types, okay? There are five energy types, and this is, again, the most important thing in human design. If you walk away with anything tonight, walk away with this. And if you choose to not ever come back, walk away with this anyway. So there are five energy types. Each type has a different way of being in the world, and that's what we really want to look at tonight. The manifestor is approximately 9% of the population. The generator is about 37% of the population. The manifesting generator is about 33% of the population. The projector is about 20% of the population, and the reflector is about 1% of the population. The reason why I put the percentages in, because people are always like, why do you tell us the percentages? Because for those of you who are at some of the more unusual percentages, it's often very reassuring to know that you didn't just make it up in your head that you don't fit in or that you're different than everybody else. You might actually really be different from everybody else. So, all right. Each energy type plays a role. So if you can imagine that we're going to put on a play, and we're going to put on a show. It's like Mickey Rooney, right? Let's put on a show. The manifestors are going to be the producers of the play. The manifestor has a role in life about getting the ball started. They're here to initiate things. They are the only type, energy type, in the whole system that can say, you know what, I'm just going to go do this, and they can go do it. that's their role in life. They get things started, and they are very creative in that way. And that's kind of what they do in life. They go out. They're like the billiard ball on the table. They hit all the balls, and then they go do something else. The generators in the play, they're the ones that provide the workforce energy. So the generators are really the builders in the world. So if you were going back to our play metaphor, the generators would be the ones that provided the lights, the cameras, the action, and did all the work, okay? Same thing for the manifesting generators. They also provide the workforce energy and as such are also true builders in the world. The projectors are the directors, okay? They are here to guide and direct the others. And they have a little bit of an interesting adventure with that role. And the reflector would be the wise observer. The role of the reflector is to magnify and reflect all that's around and to mirror it back for others. So the reflector is going to be mirroring back what's going on in the play. So we want to watch our reflector closely because if the reflector is happy and having a great time and really enjoying the show, then the show is really good because the reflector is sort of the barometer of where we're at. If the reflector is unhappy, miserable, and having a terrible time, then we might need to look at what's going on in the show and do we need to redo some of it. All right. We don't need them. Each type has a particular strategy. So each type has a unique way of going about in the world and expressing themselves in the world. So the strategy for the manifester is to inform others before taking action. Now, for those of us who are not manifestors, we're like, yeah, so what? What's the big deal, okay? For a manifester, if you are a manifester, this is a huge deal because you are a pure creative force. And when you go out in the world and you're creating and you're doing and you're initiating and you're making decisions and taking action, when you're out in the world, you're experiencing this creative flow. And this creative flow is not necessarily a verbal flow. So for those of you who are manifestors, and by the way, if you're a manifesting generator, pay attention to this too, because some of this will apply to you as well. You might, like when you decide to go do something, you might feel it in the pit of your stomach, or you might even have sounds in your head that correlate to your actions, but not necessarily words. So, for example, if I were a manifestor, sitting in my downstairs office in my basement, and I decided, okay, I'm going to get up, go to the back laundry room, sort the laundry, put the whites in, make sure that I stain treat all the shirts with hot cocoa stains on them before I turn the water on. You know, if I'm a manifester, I might have this visual or even, not even that, but this visceral sense of me getting up, going in there, and getting it started, but I'm not using my words, all right? It's not a verbal, linear creative process. It's a creative force. That's a beautiful thing to witness, and it's certainly a beautiful thing if you're raising a manifestor child. It's a beautiful energy to nurture and protect because it's a very powerful, very creative energy. But what happens in the world when you're a manifestor is that the first thing that people want to do when you're a manifestor is they want to control you. Manifestors are really one of the types that are designed to go out, experience the world, and be this creative force. They're not really here to be told what to do. In fact, funny thing is, most of us aren't. They're not really here to be stopped unless they're really doing something crazy. Like if you've got a manifestor, and this is a true story from my family, and he's got a camping cot tied to his arms, and he's getting ready to jump off a cliff because he wants to see if he can fly, yeah, you know, you might want to stop the manifestor, okay? But the reality is when the manifestor is going out and experiencing the world, first of all, they're designed to usually be pretty much okay. In fact, these are the kids that are usually the ones that are okay when they jump off the top of the playground, the play set. Or these are the kids, I mean, I can't tell you how many readings I've done for manifestors who have some kind of wacky story about how somewhere between the ages of 4 and 8, they took off into a forest somewhere and disappeared for a day or two and came back fine, thank you very much. Now, obviously, as a parent, you don't want your kid to experience this. It's kind of scary. And again, for parents, when they try to control the manifestor, it's not because they're trying to shut the manifestor down or break the manifestor. It's just, as a parent, it's kind of scary when you have this kid with this kind of creative energy. And it carries a huge impact on people. When you're standing with a manifestor, you feel it. And you feel when they move, you feel them move. Even if, you know, they're not doing anything, you know, extraordinary. My sister My oldest sister is a manifester. And when I first learned human design, we went to spend Thanksgiving with her. And I will never forget this moment because it was such a great teaching moment for me when it comes to learning about manifestors. We all sat down at the Thanksgiving table. She was at the head of the table. Obviously, it's her Thanksgiving meal. We're all talking and having a great time. We haven't seen each other, and it's really nice to be together as a family, and there's a really happy, humming, raucous kind of noise going on. My sister stands up, and she starts to walk out the door of the dining room. And as soon as she stands up, the entire room, and I have a huge family, the entire room falls silent. Everybody stops talking, and we all turn to look at her. This is the power of the manifestor. When the manifestor moves, we notice it. And she looks at us and she says, "What? I'm just going to the kitchen to get the salt." Okay? The strategy for the manifestor is to inform others before taking action, because when they move and we notice, if we don't know what they're doing, it makes us uncomfortable, or it makes us worried, or it makes us want to try to stop them, or worse yet, it makes us think we should ask them, "Do you need help?" And let me tell you, one of the worst things you can ever do for a manifestor is ask them, "Hey, do you need some help?" Because the minute you give them language, the minute you go, "What are you doing?" or "Do you need help?" is the minute they have to stop that creative flow, that nonverbal creative flow. Go back to, "Okay, what am I doing? Okay, I'm standing up. I'm going into the kitchen. I'm going to go get the salt. I'm going to bring the salt back." That stops that creative flow. In the time that it would have taken my sister to explain to everybody, "Hey, I'm just going to go get the salt," it's quite possible that she could have been in the kitchen and back with the salt, because manifestors also move fast. Manifestors don't like to inform. It's not a natural part of their lifestyle. They like to just do. But if they don't inform, if they don't make a decision and then inform the people who will be impacted by the decision, it often results in chaos that can slow them down. Imagine you're living with someone, and you guys are going to get ready to watch a movie, and while you go in the bedroom to put on your sweatpants, your partner goes to the kitchen, looks and realizes that you're out of popcorn. Your manifestor partner goes and gets in the car, drives away to the grocery store to go get more popcorn. You come out, and your partner is gone. And there's no note, and your partner forgot their cell phone, so you can't call and figure out, "Where did my partner go?" And you're standing there going, "I thought we were going to have an evening together, and now he's gone, and I don't know where he went." And by the time he gets back, you're pissed, right? And you're mad at this guy. "Where did you go, and why did you leave, and why didn't you tell me where we were going?" And your poor manifestor partner standing there going, "But I just went to go get us some popcorn." If the manifestor does not inform, it causes them a lot of havoc and confusion. But it's not natural for the manifestor to do this initially, because the fear of the manifestor is if I tell people what I'm going to do, first of all, it's going to slow me down. Secondly, people are going to try to stop me. And the worst thing in the world you can do is stop a manifestor, because they're not designed to be stopped. They're designed to create, because they have a life direction that's about initiating. So some famous manifestors include George Bush. I think he was quite well known for not informing. oh my God, this guy's name always slips my mind. Robert De Niro. I always want to call him Al Pacino. Now, let's talk a little bit about generators. The generator has a strategy that's very different from the manifestor. Okay? Manifestor has a strategy of initiating. The generator absolutely does not have a strategy that involves initiating at all. The generator is not designed to initiate. The generator has a strategy that is all about waiting. And I want to be really, really clear about this, because sometimes I talk to generators and they're really, really waiting for things that they don't need to be waiting for. Okay? When we're talking about waiting to respond, I'm talking about a generator has to wait for something to show up in their outside world, in their physical world outside of themselves, and then respond to it. If you've ever heard of the idea or the concept of waiting for a sign, the generator has a strategy of waiting for signs. Once you get a sign, if you're a generator, and it feels good to you, then you can go do whatever it is that the sign is showing you to do. So, for example, a long time ago when my big kids were little, I have four 4 big kids and I have a little 4-year-old. When my big kids were little, I decided, I was living in Houston at the time, I decided I wanted to go see the fall leaves and take the kids to see the fall leaves. So I decided I was going to get in my Suburban and drive the kids to Pikes Peak in Colorado. Of course, being a good generator, or manifesting generator, I thought I should wait and make sure I have a sign. So I told myself, okay, every time I see the number 444 on a license plate, that's going to be confirmation for me that I should go to Pikes Peak. Well, I saw the number 444 everywhere. And then I pulled up to a traffic light, and next to me in Houston, Texas, was a florist car, and it said Pikes Peak Florist, Pikes Peak, Colorado. So that to me was also a sign. As a manifesting generator, and a generator works the same way, that's confirmation. That's you responding to the signs, and I took that as a sign, and I did go to Pikes Peak, and we had a great time. It was one of the best trips I ever took. It was me and the kids all the way across Texas. It was quite an adventure. So it's about waiting for something to show up in your reality, in your outer world. So it means not just taking an idea from your head and jumping on it, but waiting for the universe to confirm for you your idea. So let's take this as an example. Let's say here you are at work and you think, oh, I need a vacation. Okay? And at your annual physical, your doctor says, hey, you're really stressed out. I think you need a vacation. Okay? Now you have a sign, right? And on the way home, you see this bulletin board that says gated luxury vacation community, and you see the word vacation, and you're like, ah, it's another sign. Feels good, right? And then when you get home in the mailbox, you find a postcard from your friend that says, I'm here at the beach. I wish you were here with me. All right? For a generator, you have to wait to respond means you have to wait for something to show up in your outer reality in order for you to respond to it. And if it feels good, do it. That also means if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. Just because you get a sign doesn't mean you have to do it. It means, does it feel good? If it feels good, do it. So some famous generators include Elvis and Einstein. Our manifesting generators are kind of like a buy one, get one free model here. You know, they have the same strategy as a generator. They're all about work. They're all about building. They're all about finding the right work through responding. So a manifesting generator, just like a generator, has to respond. But just like the manifester, because they also have some of this nonverbal creative flow with them, just like with the manifester, the manifesting generator has to also inform. So if you're a manifesting generator and you get a sign, you also have to stop and look at who's going to be impacted by my actions, who's going to notice my energy and what's happening with my energy, and make sure that you inform those people about what's happening. It's so easy when you're a manifesting generator to get so much in your speedy creative flow, and a manifesting generator can be very fast, that you forget to inform people about what you're doing. Now, I am a manifesting generator. For the last 13 years, I was a single mom, and I was raising my kids by myself, and I had them full time, and I was running my business. And one of the things that I had to really get good at doing, because I was terrible at it, is I would organize business trips and I would be all ready to go and I'd have everything coordinated and I'd have all the food cooked and I'd have a babysitter set up and I would get in the car and get ready, you know, I would come downstairs with my suitcase and my kids would be like, you're leaving? And I'd realize I forgot to inform the kids that I'm going on a business trip. And I felt so bad, but it just was so unnatural for me in my creative process of getting everything ready to stop and inform people what I was doing. I just kind of assumed that they would get it, but they didn't. And I had to really become much more conscious about making sure that I was telling people what I was doing, because there was nothing more gut-wrenching to my mother's soul than to see the shocked looks of my kids when I came downstairs with a suitcase in my hand. So some famous manifesting generators include Mother Teresa and Nat King Cole. All right. Our next type is called the projector. Remember that projectors are approximately 20% of the population. Projectors have a very unique strategy in that the projector has a life path that is all about managing and guiding and directing others. And as we said, their strategy here, as you can see, is they have to wait to be recognized or invited, which in our modern-day world, in our just-go-make-it-happen, just-frickin'-do-it, go-manifest-your-destiny kind of energy, is a very difficult way to go about being in the world, okay? So you have to wait to be invited. Now, When I say wait to be invited, I'm talking about being invited to the big things in life. You don't need to be invited to fill your gas tank for your car. You don't need to be invited to eat. Okay? You need to wait to be invited for the big things, though, like friendships and romance, career and work opportunities, and where to live. If you are a projector, you are infinitely wise about people. You really know people. You get them because that's your job. My former spouse, who is a projector, he always jokes. He says, projectors are like sheepdogs. You know, it's like we're waiting for our herd, and then we want to find our herd. We want to herd them, and it's our natural instinct to, like, herd people or herd like sheepdogs. So when you're a projector, you have this natural instinct that's about managing and guiding other people. But the thing is, and this is sort of the ironic thing, is you stand there and you know what these people need, and you know what you could do for them, and you know if they just did this one little thing, their life would be so much easier, right? But if they don't ask you, and you offer up that infinite wisdom that is so much a part of who you are, and they don't hear you, it's not because there's anything wrong with you. It's not because there's anything wrong with your advice. It's not because what you had to offer is not valuable. It's just that you didn't enter into it correctly. You didn't give them advice in a way that they could hear you. You didn't wait for them to value you enough to ask. And this is the key for the projector. It's about waiting for the value, for people to recognize the value of who you are so that they can draw from you what they need. Okay? All right? So they have to wait for you. You have to wait for them, rather, to ask you or invite you to share what it is that you have to share so that it can be heard and valued. Projectors oftentimes will say, you know, I feel like, you know, I open my mouth and I speak this great wisdom and my words are carried away in the wind. And when people do actually hear me, they either steal my idea or they ask me, who are you and why are you guiding me? You know, why are you telling me this? And they're almost angry in response to my trying to help. And it's a really difficult thing. You know, I talk a lot about projectors and I teach a lot with projectors just because of all the five types, it's usually the one that's a little bit trickier. Imagine if you are a projector, how different it is for you when you can't push and initiate. You can't go out and make it happen. What if you had a job as a projector to make cold calls? How unnatural is that for you to take on that role when what's ideal for you and best for you is for you to either have opportunities facilitated for you through invitation or for people to recognize you and then call you out into an opportunity. I'm going to share with you, I just have to share with you a couple of stories because I think we have a tendency to believe that this whole projector thing could not possibly be true because it's just so much the antithesis of how we are conditioned in our culture anymore. So I'm going to share with you one story about my ex-husband and one story that's just a short story about a friend of mine who's also loves human design and teaches human design. So the first story comes from my ex-husband who, when we first got divorced 14 years ago, he had always wanted to study acting, so he decided he was going to study acting and get a job as an actor. Now, he was very much aware that he is a projector, and so he knew that going to auditions and doing all the things that they teach you to do as an actor to get a job was not going to work. So he stayed home and sat on the couch. Now, I will promise you that he took a lot of flack from a lot of people for sitting at home, staying on the couch to get an acting job. Everybody said, you're crazy, you've lost your marbles, what are you doing? You need to just go out there, you need to get a job, you know, you need to go pound the pavement, you need to get your headshot done, and you need to be going to every audition you get a chance to go at. And he said, nope, doesn't feel right. I'm just going to sit here on the couch. So he sat there on the couch, and about 3 months later, he got a knock on the door, and this cute girl was knocking on the door. So, of course, he answered the door, right? So he answers the door, and he starts up a conversation with this girl. And they were chatting, and she's really enjoying the conversation, and she finally says to him, you know, you are really funny. And he says, oh, thank you. She goes, you know, you should come downtown. I work at the comedy club. You know, she was selling coupon books on the side. But she says, I work at the comedy club, and you would be awesome down there. We're actually holding auditions this week. You should come down and audition. Ding, ding, ding. He gets an invitation, right? So there he is sitting on the couch. Somebody knocks on the door. He gets an invitation to go to an audition, right? He goes to the audition, nails the audition, gets the job at the comedy club. Now, who would believe that you could get a job at a comedy club, which, by the way, is a very coveted job. I mean, everybody wants to work improv at the comedy club, and very few people get to do this. He never went to any other auditions. It's the only audition he went to in the course of 3 months. He didn't go anywhere, didn't do anything, except he took a couple of acting classes. Mostly he just sat on the couch. This is what's available, though, for projectors when they stop moving. If you're a projector and you have the luxury of stopping what you're doing, especially if you hate what you're doing, and taking the time to just engage in your joy and wait, you will be shocked and amazed by what shows up at your door. It's counterintuitive and totally insane, but true, okay? The second example is one that's much less extreme, but my ex-husband has extreme energy in his chart, so we only expect him to be extreme. And by the way, he's one of my best friends. We, thanks to our understanding of each other's human designs, we really have hammered out quite a magnificent friendship and have really enjoy, I think, enjoy each other's friendship now, and we do much better as not married people. The second story I want to share with you is from a manifestor friend of mine. He was actually homeschooling his projector son. And when his projector son turned 16, his projector son said, "Dad, you know, I really would love to work on a radio station." Now, again, most of us are conditioned or trained to think, okay, if your kid wants to go work on a radio station, then you tell him, "Hey, kid, get out there, go to the different radio stations, you know, write up your resume, knock on their door, and make it happen. You know, go make a presence of yourself. Get yourself known. Let people know you're out here." Well, that doesn't work for a projector. So the manifestor's dad calls up the different radio stations in town, and he talks to one radio station, and he says, "Look, my son is really interested in working at a radio station. Do you have any kind of an internship program for him?" And the radio station said, "Sure, you know, we can have a find a place for him. Let's get him started." So his dad facilitated for him an invitation. He began to work at the radio station. Within a year, this kid was station manager, okay, which is the perfect place for a projector to be. But if he had gone out and pounded the pavement on his own, it's very unlikely that he would have gotten this job. But as he entered into it correctly, facilitated and you know by his dad, his manifestor dad, who's here to initiate, and through invitation and recognition, he got this position, and ultimately it became a very, very important, very successful thing for him to do. So for a projector, it's difficult to wait. It's hard to wait. It's hard to wait for the recognition, but very, very important. It really helps you get where you want to be in the world. It saves your energy tremendously. And most importantly, allows you to be placed in a position in your life where you are valued and recognized and honored for who you are and not discounted or scowled at or taken for granted or pushed aside by people who don't understand the nature of your energy. Okay? So always wait to be invited or asked before sharing your gift of guidance and direction with others. Some famous projectors include Barbra Streisand, JFK, Marilyn Monroe is also a projector, Steven Spielberg is a projector, Barack Obama is a projector. So projectors can do big things, okay, but they have to be recognized and invited to get there. Reflectors, our last type, are lunar beings. Reflectors have to wait a total of 98 days or a lunar cycle to make decisions, okay? The reflector has a lifespan or a life energy cycle that is completely open. If you see a reflector chart, remember when we talked about openness in the chart or whiteness in the chart? The reflector has a completely white chart. They have gates, but they'll have no channels and no centers colored in. So if you think about and you remember that whatever is open is where we're taking energy in from the world around us, the reflector is taking in all of this energy, all of this energy from the world around them. Their role, remember, is to reflect the health of their community. They're here to reflect. They're like the barometers. They're here to reflect what's going on around them. Because so much of their energy is changeable, the moon is what gives them stability. And if they can wait over the course of a lunar cycle, it gives them enough time to get clear before they make a decision. Now, you can imagine for a reflector, that's a really difficult way to be in this world. Imagine going to buy a car when you have to wait 28 days or 29 days for clarity. How difficult would that be? Okay? How difficult would it be to buy a car that way? So the reflector can sometimes really kind of feel like the odd man out in our culture, particularly if they live in a very fast-moving culture. And, of course, it can be also quite painful. Michael Jackson was a reflector. And I think when we look at the story and the life of Michael Jackson, and we look at him in the context of recognizing that he was a reflector. You know, we really have to ask, you know, what was he reflecting? What community was he reflecting? Obviously, I think the health of the community that he was reflecting, which I would assume is the entertainment industry, was not a particularly pretty or healthy community. You know, if you think about, you know, first of all, he came up with the moonwalk, right? you know, certainly there was a lot of mutability in his sense of self, and I think he was always trying to change himself to kind of try to match the energy he was experiencing. You know, just like, we haven't talked about this very much, but we will talk about this particularly later on when we talk about the sacral, the manifestor, the projector, and the reflector. They're not here to work. Remember, the manifesting generators and the generators are the builders. Manifestors, projectors, and reflectors do not have the sustainable energy that the generators have for building. And so when we look at a 50-year-old reflector who has maybe been pushing too hard for all of their life, reflecting, you know, an energy that doesn't feel good, that isn't really helpful and healthy, you know, by the time 50 rolls around, they don't necessarily have the energy to push the way Michael Jackson was trying to push at the end of his life. And I think what we see very clearly is that his life force energy just really wasn't there. And part of it was it just really wasn't inherent in his chart. And ultimately, you know, it was a very difficult struggle in the end for him that, unfortunately, he did not win. You know, there are some, hopefully there are other happy reflectors out there reflecting really happy and joyful communities. Rosalind Carter, Jimmy Carter's wife, is also a reflector. Sandra Bullock is a reflector. And for those of you who are familiar with the more woo-woo part of the world, Uri Geller was also a reflector. All right. Now, let's do a quick summary. Manifestors are here to inform others before taking action. Generators are here to wait to respond. Manifesting generators are here to wait and to respond and then inform others before taking action. Projectors are here to wait for the invitation, and reflectors have to wait a lunar cycle before discussing their options with others. So we are going to go through one more quick thing, and then I'm going to open up the call for questions. So hold on. When you don't play your assigned role or follow your strategy, you will meet with lots of resistance, is my somber warning for the night, okay? We call this the not-self, and that's going to be our theme for the next 2 weeks after tonight. We are going to talk about the not-self, meaning we're going to talk about who you think you are versus who you might really be, depending on the definition in your chart. And when we're acting out of energies that are not our own, like let's say we think we're really super dramatic when in fact we're empathic, we go out in life pretending like we're super dramatic. We tend to meet with resistance. When we're acting in ways that are untrue to ourselves, we're acting out our not-self, we tend to meet resistance in life. It'll feel like this, looks like this. You can't see this, but on this slide, this poor little stick figure is banging his head on the wall. Okay. The not-self emotional theme is what we're going to talk about next, meaning when you are your energy type and you are not living true to your energy type, you will be more likely to experience a consistent emotional theme in your life. So for the manifester, if the manifester is out in the world trying to be something that they are not, trying to act in ways that are not true to their energy, if they're out trying to work and 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 do and do and do, and they're trying to be little generators, they will respond oftentimes to life by feeling anger. Or, and here's the thing that's important to understand with emotional energy, or they will inspire anger in others. The generator has an emotional theme of frustration. When the generator is not following strategy, when they're not waiting to respond, they tend to experience frustration in their life. The manifesting generator has frustration and anger, because remember, it's a two-for-one deal. The projectors, their emotional theme is bitterness, and let me promise you that if you are a projector and you are experiencing bitterness, we really have to work on healing the bitterness before we do anything, because nobody wants to invite or recognize a bitter person, and it's a difficult energy, but oftentimes the projectors feel like it's not fair. They're doing everything the way everybody else is, and it's not working, and it's not that you're doing anything wrong per se, it's that you may not be doing it in a way that's correct for your energy. If you can heal the bitterness, the invitations will come. And the reflectors, the same as disappointment. I thought it was going to be this way, but it's not. It's a different way than I thought it was, because you were forced to make a decision too quickly. All right. So We are going to stop there with the slides, and I am now going to see if you guys have any questions or comments. I really want to open up the calls and the webcast and talk about your experiences, any insights that you might have had in going through this material, both tonight or in the book, and kind of see what it's like for you to recognize or sense your type, or maybe listen to your questions that you might have about how come you don't feel like your type. That happens sometimes. But let's have a conversation about type and strategy. So I'm going to unmute the phone lines because I think we're going to be okay with phone quality. So you guys are all unmuted now. So if you are fixing dinner or tucking in your kids or chasing down your dog because he just stole dinner off the table, you can push star 6 and mute yourself out. But if not, let's have a conversation. So do I have any manifestors on the line? And by the way, this is true also for the webcast. Do we have any manifestors on the phone or on the webcast? Or I should say, because you're not supposed to ask manifestors questions. I'm wondering if we have any manifestors on the line. Yes? No? Maybe?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm wondering if you'd be all right with sharing some of your insights or experiences as a manifestor.
Sure.
And you don't have to say yes.
I wish I had been conscious of my design much earlier. I've had my design chart since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have gravitated to I ask, but it was not an easy process, and it wasn't because I knew my design. But mm-hmm. when I look at it, it's such a confirmation of what works, mm-hmm. of not asking, of when I inform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when I mean, this is beautiful. This is actually very beautiful. When I went to my husband and I said, I really want to do this class. This is really, really important to me. So I'm informing him, and what I got from him was, go, green light.
Beautiful.
And I said to him, if you don't really want me to, I won't. But this is really in my heart, and I really, really want to do this. It felt so good to be supported of, wow, yes, if that's important to you, you do it. Go. Now, that was not what I experienced early in my life. Everything was a battle.
And that's typical. I mean, that's the typical manifestor story, that a lot of times manifestors either grow up fighting or they learn to become very secretive. It's like, if I just do my own thing over here and nobody notices, I don't have to deal with them telling me what to do or stopping me or forcing me to stop. And a lot of times, I mean, not every manifestor has this story, but I find that a lot of manifestors have stories of their parents using an exceptional amount of force to try to manage them, just because as a parent you don't know what else to do, because they can seem like they are unstoppable forces. So
That's interesting. When I was small, what I did is I shut down. Mm-hmm. I stopped. I almost disappeared. That's what I did first. But it wasn't until in my 20s and 30s that it became, I started going into the fight mode.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents were really smart. They made me, what they used to nickname me, the little grandma. So they made me responsible for my siblings and for me to direct my siblings. So they didn't have to. Mm. So I took a lot of heat, because I would initiate a lot of stuff with my brother and my sister, because I was told to. But I liked it. As a manifestor, I liked being in that role.
Yeah, well, it's good to be where you don't have to be underneath anybody else's orders.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But the initiating thing.
Yeah.
And I would even gently say that the caring for children and for a family requires a certain amount of sustainable energy. And I'm not saying that, and I'm not in any way implicating your parents in saying anything, but I will say that it really is correct for the manifestor to have the freedom to also rest their energy if necessary too, because the key, one of the keys is for the manifestor is understanding, and especially if you're parenting a manifestor, they don't have sustainable energy in the same way. You know, if you send a manifestor out into the backyard to go mow the yard, you know, as a teenager manifestor, and they get out of the energy of your house, and let's say you're a generator, they might lose access to that working energy, and they go in the backyard, and it's kind of like, ooh, balloon collapsing, and all of a sudden, they're not doing what they're supposed to do, or they're sneaking around doing it, or they're trying to get somebody else to do it, and a lot of times we slap a label on the manifestor of, oh, they're lazy, and it's not laziness, it's that they're not here to work in the same way, and the work of taking care of children, or taking care of work, doing work, is not natural for a manifestor. And they can, as I said, they can do it for a short period of time. And obviously, if you're a manifestor parent, you're going to do it. But you do need to do it in such a way that you also take care of your energy so that it stays healthy and strong and sustainable. So, does that make sense?
That
or I should
sense.
Say, I'm wondering if that makes sense to you.
Oh, I love it. That makes sense. It does. It makes sense.
Good.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, and we have another another couple of manifestors on the webcast. We have Diane and Rita, and Diane says she's still learning about it, especially after years of not feeling successful and unfeminine. And that's a great point, Diane, because it's really ironic when you're a woman and you're a manifestor, because you know, as women, especially I find as older women, or I would say, now that I'm almost 50, women who have had more experience on the path of life, you know, that whole energy of initiating is very different than how a lot of us have been trained. And actually, for a manifestor, it's correct for the manifestor to ask the man to dance or ask the man to marry them rather than the other way around. And it does feel, to a certain degree, unfeminine. You know, in the older model or the, you know, of women and men, it was the woman who was supposed to be wooed and asked and initiated by the man. But if you're a manifestor woman, that's really not correct. And in fact, if you're waiting for the guy, or you're trying to act like a woman, and like we think, you know, a woman, and I'm using that in quotation marks, you know, and you're waiting and being unfeminine, you know, it really isn't correct for you energetically. You're here to go do it. And people don't always respond well to it. And I certainly find that for women who are in their 50s and 60s, and actually even in their 70s, I've done some readings for manifestor women in their 70s, it's very difficult to get that creative life force energy back. You know, it takes a little bit to turn it back on, and oftentimes the manifestors are really shocked when they find out how powerful they really are. They didn't, you know, they shut it down, as you said, in your conversation earlier, and they don't realize it. So, all right, good. All right. Generators and manifesting generators. Do we have you guys on the line? You're going to tell me you guys are all projectors? So, do we have any generators?
Yeah. I'm here.
Okay, yay. Oh. All right, good. Any insights, awarenesses, thoughts, ideas about this material?
Yeah.
Do you want to share them?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, gosh. Sorry. I didn't realize that I wasn't muted. This is Elizabeth. As a generator, I get frustrated very easily when I try to jump in and take care of things. And what I've learned, and thank God I'm not a child anymore, is that I need to rest and wait for confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's given me a lot more peace. I can't say that I do it all the time, though, because I have so much energy and I'm just moving. My head moves. My ideas move very quickly. So I'm grateful for the human design because, well, and I just picked it up, like, I think June, Karen Flaherty, did my chart, and since then everything has just clicked all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've followed a lot of the advice.
And it's very unnatural to wait, isn't it?
It is, and we're in the middle of a lot of change at work right now, and I'm desiring a lot of recognition, and I would love to be included in being considered for some upper level positions, and that's not happening. And so I just have to believe that that's the way it's supposed to be. And so I'm just going to wait because I know something else better is going to come along. That's what I believe.
And I love that attitude. And I think, you know, regardless of your type, I think one of the things, and this is really one of the things I love about human design personally, and I hope that you discover, is that it really is a very practical way to have a lifestyle and a life practice that embraces the concept that the universe is unilaterally abundant, and that abundance is available to all of us in the unique form that's correct for each and every one of us. We're not all going to do it in the same way. And then when we kick back and we live our strategy, it's a natural way for us to align with whatever is correct for us, whatever abundance is correct for us. And really, I think, takes all the head games out of having faith. You know, sometimes if you try to approach faith from your head, you know, it gets pretty complicated. And it's one of those places where I think we wrestle really hard to surrender, right? And, you know, that's sort of ironic, but kind of true, right? So when you just go, okay, you know what, I'm just going to get my head out of the game and I'm just going to follow my strategy, you really do find, you know, quite shockingly so, I think, that magic starts to unfold very easily, no matter what your type. You know, it might happen, might seem like it happens a little bit faster for the generator and the manifesting generator, but it really happens for everyone. And it happens for everyone in a way that's energetically aligned with who you are. So,
Karen, don't uh-huh. you think, though, that we also have to ask for confirmation, or we have to state some of our desires? Because I think as a generator, I do have a lot of, like, leanings towards what I'd like to have happen. But then we have to wait to see if it manifests.
I think that's a good place to start. And I think what you also might discover eventually as you go more and more into experimenting with your strategy is that at a certain point, you integrate this understanding. And it does take a little bit of time and experimenting, but you do integrate this understanding that the universe, through the evidence that it's given you repeatedly as you experiment with your strategy, clearly demonstrates that it has your best interest on its mind and in its expression. And there comes a point in time, at least I found in my own experience, and I find in a lot of people's process when they really, really embrace their strategy, there comes a point in time where you stop worrying about telling the universe, hey, I want this, and can you show me a sign? And you just sort of get into the space where you go, you know what? I'm going to be put wherever I'm supposed to be, and it's going to be awesome,
yeah.
You know?
It's the best for me, yeah.
Yeah. So, and certainly, I mean, certainly I'm not saying don't have intentions and don't be clear, and I'm certainly not saying you'll bob around directionless. But I am saying there will come a point in time where you start to realize, I mean, again, I'm speaking more probably from my own experience than anything. I certainly started to realize that divine mind was way bigger than my brain and that I just needed to go, okay, show me what's next because this is fun. It's interesting because you'll find, you know, those of you who are generators and manifesting generators especially, you will find that you get things to respond to where your sacral, your response mechanism will go, oh, yeah, I want to do that. And your head's going, what the crap? What are you doing? You know, but you start to follow that other impulse, and you find that it's pretty darn amazing. So anyway, cool, good. All right, we have our projectors. And you guys, I'm sorry, we are running just a wee bit. We might run just a wee bit over. So I'm just going to add a little bit more time to the recording, and I will do my best without neglecting our projectors and reflectors. I just want to make sure we talk to our projectors and reflectors really quickly. So our projectors, how are you?
Good.
At least any big insights, epiphanies, ahas, awarenesses that have come through the material we covered tonight or the book?
Well, I got here a little bit late, but what I heard very much applied because I've been trying to build a psychic reading business, and I've been taking action trying to initiate it, and I just have been up against a brick wall. So I think there must be some truth in waiting for that invitation.
And you'll find, is your name Elaine? Is it okay if I call you Elaine? Okay.
Yes.
What you'll find, Elaine, too, is that, first of all, I find that in the light worker community, there are far more projectors than any other type. And if you think about it, it's a really natural place for projectors to be. Projectors are wise about energy. They're here to manage and guide other people. They know stuff about people. They're very intuitive about what they know about people. So what better place for them to be than in the healer community or in the light worker community? And I do think sometimes it's one of the reasons why economically sometimes the light worker community struggles quite a bit. I used to work as a psychic at the Sedona Center for the New Age in Sedona many, many, many years ago. And this was this huge building. And in this, and they had, I think usually they had about 14 or 15 psychics working in there. At the time when I worked there, I was the only manifesting generator. There was one other reader who was a manifester. All of the other readers were projectors. And, you know, the irony about it is that most of them sort of tried to push their way into getting a job there. And then when you got a job there, you kind of had to promote yourself. You know, you had to put your picture up on the wall and you had to write a sales letter and you kind of had to walk around and try to get people to give you, you know, to hire you to do readings. If you're a projector, imagine you're a projector and you have to go about trying to create business that way. And you can imagine, Elaine, because you probably have sort of a similar experience, right?
Yeah.
And
it's
not natural. And it was a really difficult place to work. We used to call it the psychic whorehouse. So roll with me on that. It was funny at the time, but it was, you know, at the end of every month, the rent there was astronomical. The rent for my like 2x2 office cubicle was more than I paid for my house. Okay, and
wow.
At the end of the month, if you didn't make your rent, the owner would come through and unceremoniously toss your belongings into the parking lot, and it was very traumatic. It's just really kind of a difficult place to be in that respect. And, you know, it used to just break my heart because, you know, every month at the beginning of the month in the parking lot would be all these projectors with their stuff, okay? And we're talking about people who did not have the energy necessarily sometimes to move all that stuff by themselves. Sometimes they were already struggling financially. And then to have to, you know, sort all this out. It was a really interesting metaphor, I think, for the light worker community, which, you know, really needs to be recognized to gain their impact on the world. So the thing that I would say for you, Elaine, is first and foremost, I did a free class today, which ended up being a technological debacle. But if you go to the Facebook page, it'll say Human Design for Everyone on Facebook. If you go to our Facebook page, there is a link there to the recording for that program. It's called Business by Design. And I would encourage you to go listen to it because I talk a little bit about business strategies for different energy types. And that might be a nice bit of information for you to have. Secondly, what I always tell projectors is while you're waiting for the invitation, two things. Number one, get ready. So build your website, write your ebook, or write a book, or write a free report. You know, do all the things to be ready, and also follow your joy. You never know where your invitation is going to come from. And the likelihood of you getting an invitation when you're having a heck of a good time making new friends and having fun goes way up than if you're sitting around, you know, feeling angry and frustrated or bitter that it's not happening. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. I've got all the website. I've got all my stuff, all my ducks in a row. It's just now it's the actual.
And I'm going to give you one other secret. I'm going to spill the beans for you here. Are you ready?
Okay.
In all of your marketing, use the word I invite you or use the phrase invitation. So make your website a big, giant invitation. And number two, be very careful of using the word I, the pronoun I. Try to take any place on that website copy where you say I, switch it to you. Because it's difficult for the projector to get that invitation when they're talking about themselves. But when they're talking about others, people see them better.
Okay. Yeah, I'll review that. Thanks. This really helps.
Good.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Yeah. All right, cool. Let's see my other webcast people. Do I have any other projectors on the webcast? I have a lot of generators.
I got the free chart from my boyfriend. I'm totally new to Human Design, and I've got to say, you pegged him with the projector because he hates what he's doing, and he does have the opportunity to sit on the couch and wait for something to show up, and he's on his way to becoming a guitar broker.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah, from real estate to becoming a guitar broker. And he loves guitar, playing guitar, taking lessons for guitar, and getting so inspired with music that he's now doing this. And it's just, it's very nascent. So I'm just thrilled to get this confirmation. I can't wait to go upstairs and share it with him. Thank you for all this wonderful information. Bless your heart.
You're welcome. How exciting. Well, I have chills. That's great. That's really great. I love it. As your story unfolds, I'd be so happy if you would send me how that story unfolds. I love projector stories because the projector is such clear evidence that the universe is hugely benevolent and abundant, and that it operates way out of the confines of our belief systems. And it's pretty cool when you hear these stories. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Cool. All right, last but definitely not least, do we have any reflectors on the line or any reflectors who want to share their stories? So, good. All right, good. Okay, somebody says, as a generator, how would you word a website? So as a generator, if you are building a website, you want to ask yes or no questions. So you might put at the top of your website, are you looking for a guaranteed way to feel more alive in your life? Okay, that's a yes or no question, right? So you want to use yes or no questions in your marketing. And actually, projectors, you can do that too, because you'll get the generators to respond. But I might even say, if you're a reflector, are you looking for an invitation to feel more alive in your life? One other really quick thing I was going to say. There was one. Hold on. There's something else on the webcast, and then the page disappeared. Come back, page. The Facebook page. Yes, the Facebook page again. It's Human Design for Everyone. So if you look up Human Design for Everyone, you will find the page, hopefully. If for some reason you absolutely cannot find the page, just send me an email, Karen@joyfulmission.com, and I'll send it to you. So. All right. And like I said, if you go back and listen to the Business by Design class I did today, just laugh and have a big sense of humor about the technological gremlins, because it was pretty funny to somebody else, not to me. So, all right. Well, I think that covers it for tonight. I think I gave you guys a lot of stuff to chill on. Just a couple of quick reminders. Again, if you go back to understandinghumandesign.com, if you go to the reader resource page, there's all these audios that you can listen to that are pertaining to different parts of the chart, and they're referenced in the book. Also on that page, there's a link to the Lunch and Learn Resource Center. So if you go to that the other page, there's a second page of recordings. There's all kinds of recordings there that cover really practical aspects about human design. So we talk about human design and parenting, human design and being psychic, human design and business, human design and love, human design and fear. So there's a lot of cool stuff on there. My absolute favorite one is all about 2012 human design and evolution. So if you really want to get into some of the weird and wacky but really cool stuff, that one's there for you to listen to as well. So enjoy those recordings. And I invite you and encourage you to dive in deep, because it's pretty fun and pretty cool. Next week, we're going to tackle the nine centers. So we're going to talk about the energy centers, how the themes of those centers might be impacting your life and some of the choices you might have been making about your life, how you can, with consciousness and awareness, start making different choices and decisions and have different awarenesses of how your energy works and what you can do to live out the highest expression of yourself as yourself. So I just want to thank you guys very much for buying the book. And most importantly, I just want to thank you all for being the most beautiful and full expressions of you as you. I have done over 6,000 readings. I can't even tell you how many charts I've run in the last 13 years, almost 14 years. And I will tell you that every single chart takes my breath away. You are each and every one of you perfectly and magnificently designed. And it has been an honor to share this time with you. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. If you have any questions or comments, again, go to the Human Design page on Facebook. Or if you have a different kind of a question that you don't want to share, you want to shoot me an email, Karen@joyfulmission.com. We have a whole team of people who answer questions. And if you have a question for me personally, my assistant, Kristen, will make sure I get it. So have a wonderful evening, rest of the evening, and have a great week. And I look forward to talking to you guys next week.
Thank
Good night.
You.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Everybody.